there it is. That old familiar beat getting into my feet. I am ready to rock back for DLC, your downloadable conversation for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, and that is completely free. And that is thanks to our sponsor this week, new sponsor, Linda. Oh, Linda. Linda makes that possible, bringing the show completely free to you. The show, DLC, that is all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2Ns 1T Kanata, and I'm joined by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who, let's face it, did a fantastic job over the last 2 weeks. I got to thank you, Christian Spicer, for knocking it out of the park 2 weeks in a row. Thanks, buddy. How you doing?
Of course, man. I'm good. Welcome back to reality. This is your first show as a married guy. Hope that ball and chain doesn't drag you down, you know?
Yeah, we got a whole show full of married guys, but I'll get to that in a second. I'm happy to be back. I literally got back last night, a 14-hour flight back from Italy. And yeah, I might be a little bit jet lagged, but that's okay. We'll get through the show. We'll rock it. I'm really excited to be back. I was listening to the shows while we were gone. I was kind of unplugged and not gaming and not doing much other than just relaxing and enjoying the Italian countryside. But I'm excited. We're jumping into the fall season where the big releases are coming. It's going to be lots of stuff to talk about. And DLC is your downloadable Kanata. It's your downloadable Christian. But this week, we got a returning champion coming back all the way back from last March. He was last on our show. That means that DLC is again dungarees, lily pads, and cartoons, because we've got Mr. Frog Pants himself, Scott Johnson, friend of the show.
Hey, man. Welcome. Hey, both of you all. And listen to this. Like, it's a little bit weird because last time I was on, it was your first day in a new apartment. Oh. Now it's your first day back from your wedding.
Look at that.
It's a little weird. So as long as your bandwidth holds up to the wedding part, we should be fine. This is good.
Yeah. Last time I literally got kicked off in the middle of the show. So, you know, if we can get through, it will be plus one to that. But I appreciate you coming back. Love your shows, all of them. You do, what, eight of them?
Yeah, it's like eight of them now. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. Yeah. But it's been good because since we last spoke, I launched a twice-a-week gaming news show called Boop, B-O-O-P.
And nice.
Part of that is, you know, me keeping up on the latest and the greatest in news and stuff. But, man, I always love coming back to DLC to talk to a couple of awesome dudes about this stuff in detail. So thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being here. Let's get right to those news stories with Story of the Week.
Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week.
Ah, you love it. You missed it, I'm sure. And some people hate it, but you know what? I love it. So it's staying in the show. The kid stays in the picture. That's the story of the week. Bumper, we have to thank the story of the week bumper submitter, Patrick L. from Sweden. It's been a while since I mentioned his name. Thanks for sending that in, Patrick, way back when. Story of the week, the part of the show where we all decide what the most important stories were this week. And you can submit stories to us for our consideration using the hashtag DLCSOTW on the Twitters or using our subreddit at reddit.com/r/5x5DLC. That subreddit is great. I really recommend people checking it out. It's been going strong. I was really so excited when I got back this week to check it out. There's some really cool threads, including a pitch guests for the show thread, and people are getting some cool suggestions there for guests that we should try to get on, and lots of other cool stuff. So I urge people to check that out. It's not just for submitting stories, but that happens there as well. Scott, as our returning champ, you get first pick. What is your story of the week this week?
Oh my gosh, probably, this is a hard pick. Probably the Hearthstone deal and the next expansion. And part of the reason this is so, preeminent in the front of my mind is that game's success in the face of what Blizzard normally does and what I think Blizzard's about to do. And that is to embark into making more games that are more accessible to more people on platforms that they aren't normally known for. And with Titan going away and their reasoning behind that, and them straight up saying, and I think it's important to remind people that Blizzard, one of the most important developers in game history, full on said, we don't know if we want to make another MMO. That's a huge thing for Blizzard Entertainment to say. And when they said that, I went, that's because they're learning that this new, we're in a new era of gaming, whether we like it or not. It's a new weird space, and they have to figure out those spaces and figure out what to do in those spaces. And Hearthstone is kind of a, it's a representation of this shift in thinking at Blizzard. And so hearing about how actively they're supporting it, how many more people have added to Team 5, how many of those people are, you know, entirely solely focused on this game, whereas before they were kind of floaters, just leads me to think that they have seen the light and they are going to do more in the way of casual fare, or not casual fare, because this is as hardcore as you can get as well, but more Blizzard games on the go, more Blizzard games that are smaller, faster to market, easier to make into sensations that people could, you know, play with each other when it comes to esports and things like that. And the fact that they've got this big expansion coming is just emblematic of that. But to me, that speaks to the bigger cultural shift at Blizzard.
Yeah, you're referring, of course, to this article on Polygon with an interview with the production director of Hearthstone, Jason. Is it Chayes?
Yes, Jason Chayes.
Talking about the how they've got big plans for the next expansion. It's going to have tons of cards. They're saying over 100 new cards coming in the next expansion. But I love how you framed this as a broader discussion about Blizzard. I was away when the news came down about Titan being canceled, and you certainly have your bona fides for talking about Blizzard. One of my favorite of your shows is The Instance, which has been going strong for, what, several years now?
8 years now.
Whoa!
Holy crap.
How did that happen?
I don't know, man. It's freaking me out. Well, I'll be, when I'm at BlizzCon this year, it'll just be the weirdest year ever, because 8 years is a long freaking time.
Moving up to your first decade of show. but that show is all about Blizzard stuff. And I love how you framed this as a discussion about Blizzard, because, yeah, I think that this, what seems to have been a passion project, a side project that has really proven to be a centerpiece in the Blizzard, constellation, I guess you could say, of products. And that the fact that, yes, they're supporting it, it's a moneymaker, it's fantastically popular, and people are digging it, and they're going to continue making big expansions for it, and that the Naxxramas stuff worked well. But also that it's really their first foray into free to play, and we're going to see that their next big product, Heroes of the Storm, if you their next big IP, I should say, sure. Heroes of the Storm is also going to be free to play. Meanwhile, their next big product of all of the products that are coming out is an expansion to World of Warcraft coming at the end of this year, which is the other end of the spectrum. It's that pay to play model that they're still milking, and as you say, might not be doing that kind of thing going forward. And they're sort of in this weird, uncanny valley of stuck between two companies, two company perspectives of how long does World of Warcraft continue churning along in its current pay structure? I guess my question is to you guys, to both of you guys, is this the canary in the tunnel for the entire games industry? Is this where everybody is going, or is this just one particular company changing course of its tanker in the sea?
Well, I'd love to hear Christian's take on this, because this has to be. I feel like I'm almost too close to the bone on some of these predictions, and I have some theories, but I would love to hear your perspective first.
It's hard, because so many people, I think, were excited for Titan, and I think that this reflects Blizzard, though, being smart instead of trying to repeat their own magic. I think that they're not, they haven't had their heads in the sand, and they've watched other MMOs come out and flounder and then transition to free to play. And then they've seen the rise of MOBAs. And I think what Blizzard has done and done well is they're not the first to the party. They're often not the first to the party, but when they show up, they have a refined, elegant, sometimes eventually becoming elegant take on it that becomes, the tentpole of the genre. And I think they're looking to do that again, and not being involved in the discussions or having any inside knowledge, I feel like the Titan discussion just kind of went to, you know, what can we do in this space that will revolutionize it or streamline it or make it something different and cooler and better and unique? And I think they just realized they couldn't. And those that time and money and resources is better spent on, you know, Hearthstone or their MOBA or whatever else they have coming down the pipe. And I mean, I applaud them for the move. One, they have the cash to do it, right? It's not as if they're struggling and their back's against the wall and need to come out with something. But I like when companies, you know, are forward thinking and they're not just cranking out the next MMO. Now, don't get me wrong. Blizzard continues to crank out the next expansion for their current MMO. But I think this is exciting. I could see why people are upset, but like, I don't know. I think it's good news.
Maybe. Yeah, it's great news. I think the fact that they did this shows a lot of bravery on their part. They've already shown in the past they've been willing to do this in the past. They've given up on projects right down the wire. I mean, StarCraft Ghost was literally on the edge of being released, and they changed their minds and said, nope, not up to our standards. I've always admired it. They're in a better position now than ever to let something go because, like you said, their back's not against the wall financially. But I think that their willingness to do it is also them becoming inadvertently transparent about what the last 8 years has been for them, the last decade, actually, this fall. And that is a very different market they entered into, quickly dominated it, have stayed on top since, and have seen lots of competitors come and go and adopt new payment models. And they've seen the industry on the whole adopt a new payment model in many ways. And now you cannot apply the same launch mentality they had then to now. If they've been working on this for 7 years, I guarantee it wasn't a free-to-play plan back 7 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah, that's interesting.
So
here
they are now with nothing else to do other than evaluate it, decide whether it's still something they want to do. And if the passion's not there or it's not working, or if the king of the hill says, we don't necessarily want to be in the business of topping ourselves in a genre that is a little unsure of itself right now. I don't see anything wrong with this, but I think we benefit in other ways, which is the technologies that they used in working on that game for 7 years. And some of that tech and some of those ideas, that stuff all has a trickle-down, roll-down effect to their other projects. I have no doubt we'll see that stuff later. So sad not to see what it was, even though we have some ideas about what it may have been. But sad not to see what it could have been, but more happy to know that they're not rushing something to market or making me feel like an idiot for buying it.
Yeah, I love what Pabosher in the chat room said. They're not afraid to kill their darlings, which you know, as you mentioned, is proven with StarCraft Ghost and with Warcraft Adventures before that. It makes me sad because hearing about what Titan was supposed to be really felt like what they were putting a lot of their ingenuity into was figuring out this other side of gameplay that isn't combat, that was going to create this vibrant, interesting world to be a part of that didn't have anything to do with killing things. That was the social thing. That was this, you know, creating items in the game and selling them and having these weird, interesting social structures that emerged. All of that stuff, I really would love a company like Blizzard to invest in and figure out ways to create, make fun. And the fact that they go, well, the reason we're not putting this out is because we couldn't find the fun makes me really sad about that. But it is remarkable. It is admirable. Not to open an old wound, but there's no way a company like Blizzard would release Destiny the way it is now. They wouldn't do it.
Open that wound wide open, dude. I'm with you 100% on that. There's no way they would.
Just that.
I wouldn't be surprised if whatever playable state Titan was in now would have been just fine for plenty of companies out there. You know, like it was probably a pretty darn interesting game right now. It just wasn't up to their high standard, just like StarCraft Ghost was. I mean, I'm sure like me, Scott, you had played StarCraft Ghost at many events up to it getting canceled.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to play a GameCube version of it, which was really weird at the time. And I thought it was really awesome. And again, it would have served fine. It would have been a fine game. It would have sold a ton of stuff. It just didn't reach whatever their levels are. And I'm pretty sure, I this is all speculation, but I'm pretty sure whatever playable internal alpha they were playing, and they were, we know they were playing it internally.
Right.
They can't talk about it or all their heads are on a chop. But I'm sure that playable state would have been at least as good or better than perhaps, I don't know, Old Republic was at launch. Most of these companies tend to launch because of times and quarters and and what investment. They have to give to shareholders money. And all this stuff. And Blizzard has always been willing to say, no, we're not done and you'll have to wait. And we're slowly losing companies that can do that. And also we're slowly losing companies who have the financial wherewithal to do it. Blizzard is lucky that they had an attitude and a model like that early on that now still serves them in a market that may not have had they started today.
Right.
It would have been harder for them today because it's a very different game market. They've got a lot of cash to be able to back up that kind of thinking, but you're sort of lucky in that way, I think.
Now, speaking of business model, let's talk a little bit about the details of this Hearthstone expansion idea. I mean, we've seen them take a free-to-play game and say, hey, here's an expansion, Naxxramas, where you have to pay money to do it. Are you interested in seeing this next expansion that seems to be themed cards, but not specifically single player content like Naxxramas was? It's more just general update of cards, more like a Magic the Gathering type release. Are you interested in seeing that done as a, hey, buy the whole thing for X number of dollars? Or do you want to be able to go into the shop and say, I'm going to buy a pack, but I'm going to buy a pack of the new stuff as opposed to the old stuff? Or how would you like to see that handled?
Well, it's interesting because everybody has pretty much been in full agreement since launch day or even since the alpha for this game that that A, it was good and they were onto something, but B, they seem to have adopted a great and sort of reasonable payment model for the free-to-play stuff that people crave in these kinds of games and don't get irritated with. In other words, you could earn a lot of what you were doing. And in fact, you could earn everything in this game, you could earn it all with gold. That has just been true since the beginning, and it's true to this day. I spent money in that game partially because they weren't trying to force me to, and I made a decision on my own to do it. Mm-hmm. And you can do that in this game. But this presents perhaps them testing what people are willing to do. And we've learned from Smurf Berries and freaking Candy Crushes that people are willing to spend money on terrible, terrible free-to-play models. Yeah. So what I hope is that this isn't Blizzard's attempt to say, well, we can push that envelope a little bit because clearly people are willing to spend, you know, bad money after bad, whatever. And we're just going to try this a little bit with some expansion content. I don't know how that's going to go. You know, I would rather everything forever be earnable in the game, even if it's hard earned, but to make it earnable in the game, because you're always going to have that gamer who's like, I'm going to beat this game. I'm going to do everything you can. I'm going to be a top notch streamer and a competitive player. And I've never spent a dime. You're going to always have a player like that. If you start limiting that either now or in the future, I think you're at least opening the sort of the PR problem that is free to play these days.
One of the interesting things about this interview also was them talking about foreseeing a time where they get to that Magic the Gathering type critical mass, where there's so many cards that are coming out that they have to sort of limit, they have to take a subset and have those be the playable cards and limit people to certain things. And it's interesting to hear Jason Chase talk about how they are anticipating that. And that they have some interesting, he doesn't mention details about what these ideas are, but they have some interesting ideas as to how they're going to try to tackle that problem. I think because you're in a digital space, it opens up a whole lot of opportunity. They don't have to worry about some kid wandering in with a weird card that he, you know, has been holding on to in his closet. Yeah. They have a complete control over the ecosystem, which is interesting too.
Yeah. I mean, it's 100 new cards. It's an amazing bunch of value if you're really into the game. And I continue to love the game and be terrible at it. So I'm less likely to be jumping all over these 100 new cards because I still suck. And all this means is I'm going to suck worse for a while because people are going to figure out new stuff and whatever. But it is a weird relationship I have with this game. I love the lore of it. I love the background of it. I love the execution. I love everything about this game, except that I am notoriously super crappy at CCGs. And so it's kind of a weird thing where I feel like I'm hanging out with somebody I really like, but I don't belong with them. It's odd. It's an odd thing with that game for me.
How are you at CCGs though, Scott?
CCGs? Well, I'll tell you what, if I even knew what a CCG was, I might be even more into whatever the hell it is. What is it actually?
I believe it's the same thing forward and backwards. So I thought you were going to be super on game.
Nah, dude. Look, I'm the worst.
Wow. Wow.
Wow. Like, wow, for example.
Yeah.
LOL. League of Legends. Got it.
Exactly.
Hey, wait a minute. You may have just keyed in on something. How come all these games with these syzygies are so popular?
Oh, that's a palindrome. What is a syzygy? It's a mathematical thing. Palindrome. Someone in the chat room, let me know what it is.
It's not a syzygy?
Yeah. Well, way to bring it up and not even know yourself, Christian.
Hey, classic. Jeff, I'm not the host, so I can do what I want, and you have to clean it up.
All right. Speaking of cleaning it up, what's your story of the week?
Well, I'm going to dive in on it's Jarek or at AsKnight613 who first tweeted this to all of us. But I didn't see it initially, and it is currently blowing up NeoGAF, and it looks like the original link or story is coming out of videogamer.com, and it's more awesome news from the fine people at Ubisoft on Assassin's Creed Unity, and they put out a statement saying that it will run at 900p and 30 frames per second on both PS4 and Xbox One, the publisher opting to aim for platform parity to avoid discussion over the differences in performance. And then they say it's because they wanted to avoid all the debates and stuff, and that it's the CPUs, not the GPU, that prevents them from improving the game's performances. So you could argue.
And I fell asleep.
So you could argue it needs to be the same. No, I don't know. I think this is interesting, especially because this is the first Assassin's Creed that was shown on stage at a Microsoft press conference at E3. This is the first Assassin's Creed, I believe, that has the marketing deal with Microsoft versus Sony. And whatever you think about the consoles, if you love your Xbox One, that's great. I'm not trying to take it away from you. But most, if not all, multi-party games, multi-platform games, can run a little bit better on the PlayStation 4. And this is the first example of, I think, a game coming out being the same across both. And, you know, it happened a lot.
They stole our P's. They stole our P's is what you're saying.
You make light of this, Jeff, but
there's 100 P's that we need. Where's our 100 P's?
You make light of this, but you bought an iPhone 6 when it came out, even though you wouldn't get it for 2 weeks because you were on your honeymoon. You have a 3D TV. You have all the newest, latest, best, shiniest stuff, and you can't pretend that this stuff doesn't
matter.
Want
all the peas. It's because I want all the peas.
Well, the reason this is going to be a stinker for a lot of people, Christian, I think, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but it's not just because it's being, you know, done this way, you know, in general, that something's being dropped down for whatever reason, but they're actually saying we want it to be we want parity between the consoles. In other words, they're saying, sorry, PS4 guys, you guys, we know it's capable of more. In fact, I'm pretty sure Assassin's Creed 4 still runs, or with a patch anyway, runs at 1080p on PS4s and not on the Xbox One. So what they're basically saying is, look, we're going to artificially block this simply for PR versions or PR reasons to control the conversation, to keep the freak out at a minimum. I think that's going to backfire. The freak out's going to happen on the other end.
Yeah, how come when Scott says it, you don't make fun of him, Jeff?
He said, I like Scott.
I think this is important, and I agree with Scott, and Jeff, I hate you.
I think it's not important from a, like, am I going to care as a player? Probably not that much after the first few minutes.
Because it'll
be in the back of my mind and stuff.
Well, no,
so I'm probably not going to care that much. I'm more bothered that this is a thing that has gotten so, it got silly on our end as players, but now it's gotten so silly that it's in the hands of developers who are now making political decisions based on their release because they've got a deal going with Microsoft. Presumably that's why they're doing this, and they don't want to create that rift. It's just going to create more rifts. You should just quit dancing around it. These guys have, Ubisoft and this team, do they do a lot of dancing around stuff? And I don't know why.
Well, it's because they can't, you know, create women, but they can create dancing.
If you have dancing, you're an MMO. That's the rule. If you have dancing, you're an MMO.
This is, but you're not, because Destiny has dancing and you hate it. This has always been happening. I don't want to sit here and pretend like this is a new thing. You know, PS2 games were often, you know, limited but that was the best-selling hardware at the time. So it made maybe a little more sense. Also, PC gamers have been getting, you know, the brunt of this unfortunate situation for years, where games come out on consoles and PC ports fail to take full potential of that hardware. It's getting a little better now, but this is kind of, I think, an early example of the not leading platform controlling the development of a multi-platform game. And whether or not that continues is something that's interesting, because when we buy these consoles, we hope that they take full advantage of this hardware and we get these new shiny things. And I know, Jeff, you've complained that you haven't felt wowed by a next-gen experience yet. And maybe you won't get that fully realized experience because...
It's because of the peas. Because of the peas that I'm not getting. I'm sure it's the peas.
No, not peas. You need more peas.
Hey, Jeff, what's your story of the week other than that you got married and apparently became an idiot?
Isn't that what happens? I thought that was what happens. You put the ring on. It's interesting that this is basically the exact same story as another big story this week that came out on the Nintendo front, which I know you love to hate, Christian. In that the
played Smash?
The 3DS version of Super Smash Brothers is sort of dictating what can be in the Wii U version of Super Smash Brothers based on its specs. So in the sense of this has nothing to do with peas, this has something to do with characters and content. And I guess there was this interview with Sakurai, the designer of Super Smash Brothers, and he said that, yes, there used to be in previous versions characters that could switch in the middle of the game their costumes, like Zero Suit Samus, and Zelda could turn into Sheik, and it was really cool. But 3DS, not so much. Can't do it. So they yanked it out. They made them separate characters. And he said that actually pushed them into a good direction because it made each of those characters its own character and they fleshed those characters out, and that was kind of cool. But brawlers like Popo and Nana, which also I think I got Popo and Nana's first album, which was fantastic.
Oh, Popo and Nana.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah. They were cut from this year's game because of hardware restrictions. So the 3DS version, in order to maintain, again, parity in this case, they're yanking out actual content or preventing content from being the way it has been. So are you just as riled up about this, Christian? I'm assuming you are.
Well, the difference here is that this is games that are on one family of consoles, so it doesn't quite strike the same nerve as the other examples that you gave. But I think could have just set this as a designed decision instead of saying it was because the 3DS gimped it. You know what I mean? Like, that might be the real reason, but I don't know why they needed to come out and say that. I guess honesty is good. But Mark from marketing would be upset. He would be like, to stay on message. They were giving more fighters. Each fighter has unique movesets, and now you have multiple fighters to fight with. Instead of worrying about transformations, you get to explore the deep intricacies of each individual fighter, and we're elevating them and making them their own character, and isn't that great? Rah, rah, rah. That's how you spin it.
Mark from marketing would never have allowed this interview. He would have stepped in and been like, what Sakurai is saying is, he doesn't say we couldn't do it. He's saying we chose not to do it.
I just think
the line "incapable of rendering both ice climbers at once" is a fantastic thing to say, no matter what the context is. I just love that.
I do think it's a different example than cross-platform or cross-console manufacturer parity, because at some point Nintendo signed off on this.
Doesn't have that juicy soap opera aspect that makes it so fun. Of like, no,
the
company is forcing
company being okay with you. Came back. Are you sure you didn't go to Mexico because you have the drama of a telenovela going on.
Very jet lagged. Very jet lagged. I don't even know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
My story of the week. Go ahead, Scott.
I was just going to call bull crap on this one last part of this though.
Okay,
I play games on the 3DS. I am no programmer. I don't have hardware developer kits here for the 3DS. I have seen things happen on that screen, though, that make me think you could have rendered both ice climbers at once. That's all I had to say.
You have no idea what it takes to render an ice climber, let alone two ice climbers. The processing power alone of the ice and to climb it?
Oh, Lord. I hadn't considered the climbing part.
Why don't you stick to one of the 30 podcasts you know something about and leave 3DS development to the pros?
Oh, man.
Fair point.
Interesting episode. Okay, my story of the week is going to be Jeff's VR story of the week. Actually, there's two VR stories that I wanted to bring up, and neither of them makes me particularly excited, but I still want to bring them up because they're funny. The first one is this Microsoft Room Alive thing. Did you guys watch the video? So they did, what was it called? IntelliRoom or something like that a few years ago, or last year or the year before, where it showed, extending the edge of your screen on your television into the room so that you've got sort of color.
Did you get to that via Game Room from the Xbox 360?
IntelliRoom, yeah, I guess so. I guess that's the next logical extension. But everybody saw this. We talked about this when it happened. It was kind of just extending the color range into the rest of your room. It was cool, but it was just a kind of a minor additive thing. Well, sure. This is the next step of that idea. Room Alive is this demo that they showed. It's just a proof of concept. It's not actually a product that's going to happen anytime soon. It seems rather expensive. But it's basically a whole bunch of projectors hooked up to a whole bunch of Kinects because they have them lying around because they're not including them with the consoles anymore. And it's projecting images through the entire surface of your room. So on every ceiling, floor, wall, piece of furniture, it's as if you walked in front of somebody's home projector. It's just projecting all over the place. And also reading your position in relation to those projections so you can interact with stuff all around you, which sounds really cool. And it made me click on this link super fast until I watched the video. And then I noticed, it's not that cool. There's some cool stuff about it. You cast a big shadow, as anybody who's walked in front of a projector knows. So that's problematic. Even though there's multiple projectors going all around you, these guys are still casting big shadows and it's still awkward and sort of dim. And as projectors often are, it's sort of, imprecise and there's not a lot of P's, it's low P's. But there are some cool concepts. There's like this, the most interesting one, the one that is a no-brainer is the wandering around and hitting something, something that crawls on the wall and you smack it. You swat at it in the air and it recognizes that you swatted at it and then it runs away. That's the no-brainer one. The interesting one, I thought, was the one where you're actually still sitting on your couch and you have a controller in your hand and you're controlling like a top-down Diablo-esque game. And you see a little avatar of your character on the floor, and then he can run up the wall and shoot guys that are on the wall, and then run on the ceiling and shoot guys on the ceiling and run on your sofa. That was kind of cool, but I really don't think this is going to be a thing.
It's such a gimmick. So, I mean, I don't know. I think of Milo when I hear this, or I think of that. What was that other thing they were doing where you could take pictures of... I forgot. You could use the Kinect to take a bunch of pictures, and then pictures of those things would end up being in-game objects, and they made a huge stage deal out of it at E3
right.
A few years back. And I do not remember the name of this thing, but all I could think of was how soon is someone going to take a picture of their junk and put it up there?
Right.
And that went away too. This feels like that to me, and I don't want it to feel like that to me. I want this to feel awesome and exciting. And we're all kids at heart who love the idea of virtual stuff, and this just feels like a world where Oculus Rift and other VR technologies are coming to the forefront, this just feels like a weird like half step thing.
And I'm feel not like
that excited about it.
I feel like Microsoft is, and I really don't mean this to be a trolling comment if it comes out this way, but I feel like Microsoft is really really good at creating prototype technology or things that are cool or maybe baby steps towards something that could be cool, but then not quite knowing what to do with it or how to implement it or how to make the cool thing or how to get it to consumers. And I think that includes Kinect 1.0 and the changes to Kinect 2.0 and the original table-sized Microsoft Surface and now this and even the actual Surface Pro itself. And I don't know at what point it kind of falls apart. But Windows phones have some really great tech in them also. But somehow in the packaging and delivering, or maybe it's just the messaging of these things, I find more often than not it falls short. And so I'm curious this will be.
Well, maybe it was going to be nothing. I don't know. I just love the idea that a company of the size and scale of Microsoft has an R&D department and that we got to see this. I don't think it's going to be anything, but I'm glad that they're showing. There was another video that came out from Microsoft showing this flexible paper thing that doesn't need an external sensor to show you how the paper is being flexed. So that's cool stuff. Who knows what it's going to be?
That kind of stuff is cool. It's just when they show, like, I remember the original Kinect announcement, they showed a kid scanning a skateboard into the camera and then suddenly riding on a virtual skateboard in the house. And I remember thinking, well, that's probably not even possible. What is this they're doing? But we all got excited about it, but that never, materialized into anything. So when they show actual R&D footage like this, where something's actually functioning and it isn't just spin on stage, that's better than, than the other. And I like the idea that, I mean, remember when they saw the Surface for the first time? I was like, holy crap, the Surface. That's the future. And they were right. It was totally the future. We're all using Surface tablets in our pants now. Lack of a better way of saying that.
What about this other thing? Dexmo. Do you guys see Dexmo? Dexmo is kind of cool. Again, feel like nobody's going to put it on, but I would. Dexmo is this thing that's evidently going to launch on Kickstarter because they want to be like the next Oculus. And it's haptic feedback. It's a glove, for lack of a better term, because it doesn't really
look
like a
spider. It's a spider you put on your hand.
It's a hand spider, yeah. A series of hand spiders, really, that give you, allow you to input your finger, and but also give you haptic feedback. So it, and when you touch something in a virtual world, so when you got the Oculus on your face and you touch something, it gives you, it feels like you're pressing on something. I think that's really rad. They said it's going to cost less than $200, and they're going to put the Kickstarter campaign up sometime this month. They're shooting for $200,000. I don't know. I don't know if I'm that much of a sucker to jump in this early, but it does seem kind of cool. The bummer is they do not have the ability to simulate softness. So there goes half of the games that I want to play. There goes, sorry, porn industry. No Dexmo for you. But
yeah, it's cool. I mean, I don't know about $200, but it's cool. I like the aftermarket that's springing up around VR. I think that's a really strong thing for the future of that technology, because it means that you're going to get augmented experiences through other devices or other services or whatever. And they showed this a lot at Oculus Connect, that event in LA a couple of weeks ago, where it was less about, well, here's what the current VR setup is, and more about, well, look at these weird things we're researching at MIT, or this strange product that so-and-so is making. And that aftermarket stuff is very fascinating to me. And I, you know, in a lot of ways, it's like user-generated content or, you know, mods for video games. There could be some really inventive stuff coming out of that.
Well, we got lots more stories to talk about. We're going to be talking about Shadow of Mordor and a lot of other cool stuff. But first, I do need to thank our sponsor, Linda. Linda's not a lady. Well, she is a lady, but so much more than a lady. Linda, I will say this right at the top of the show, or right at the top of this read here. I love learning. I am a fan of learning. It's nerdy, but it's awesome. I love to learn new things. Linda is a place to go to learn stuff. People use YouTube for that sometimes, but Linda is so much better than YouTube. It's high quality videos that teach you how to do things from people that know what they're doing. They get experts, not just experts, they get people who are clear, concise, and good on camera. In fact, there's no part of this that, where they wanted me to say this, but I was very close to becoming a Linda host guy. I almost, they wanted me to do some videos explaining some stuff. And I loved investigating their service, finding out a little bit more about it. And I love the fact that they had put so much priority on creating high-end videos that are actually good. It's not just that you have to sift through these hours of YouTube people that are give you half the information that you want and kind of shakily video what the thing is they're trying to show you. No, this is very cool. They are industry experts, software companies who can give you information about specific pieces of software. If you want to learn how to use Photoshop, for example, or any editing software, stuff that is deep and intense and you need an expert to show you how to do it, it's great. They have searchable transcripts, playlists, and certificates of course completion, which are cool. You can show a potential employer that you know how to use certain things. And you can publish it to your LinkedIn profile, which is really cool. And whether you're a beginner or you're advanced, lynda.com has courses for all experience levels. So you don't have to worry about, I sort of know how to use Photoshop. Well, they're going to give you high-end Photoshop courses, all that kinds of cool stuff. One low monthly price of $25 gives you unlimited access to their site, and they have over 100,000 video tutorials. You can also download an app for your iPhone, iPad, or Android that goes with lynda.com. And premium members with an annual plan can download courses on those devices and watch them offline. So you don't even have to be logged in. If you're on a plane like I was for 14 hours, you can study up on things and learn new skills. It's really, really cool. For any software that you rely on, lynda.com can help you stay current with all the software updates, so they keep their videos up to date. So you're not just watching some YouTube video and going, oh my God, this is not even useful to me because they've changed this program. It's really, really cool. So we got them to give you a deal because you listen to DLC. I would say it's DLC, so we'll give you a DLC. Lynda.com will provide you with a special offer to access all their courses for free for 7 days. All you have to do is go to lynda.com. That's LYNDA.com/DLC. So lynda.com/DLC to try lynda.com free for 7 days. They have supported DLC. We hope you support them. Check it out. They have so many courses. It's really, really cool. Again, lynda.com/DLC. All right, dudes, let's check in on a couple of other stories. There were some stories that were submitted by people on the subreddit that I want to talk about. One is, did you guys see the Destiny Honest trailer?
I thought that was, yeah, it was funny. Yeah. Well made.
Yeah, submitted by DatSim1015. Really funny. Just point that out. Also, the new Sony Xperia Z3 line of phones and Android phones and laptops, or excuse me, pads, tablets, they are going to support remote play with your PS4. How cool is that? Would that be a, I know you already have a Vita, Christian, but Scott, would that be something that would make you want to buy a phone that you could plug it into a controller and then all of a sudden be able to play your PS4 games and somewhere else in the house?
Well, there'd be a couple of factors that have to come into play. One, I'd have to, you know, be interested in a phone that wasn't the one I have now, which is an iPhone, but also I also have a Vita, which I love a lot, and I really like remote play on there, except I got Diablo problems on the, I hate how that thing controls Diablo. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's not meant to be that way. It's fine. Whatever, Blizzard, just fix those back controls. That touchpad thing sucks. But back to the point, if I was an Android guy and that was my only other connection to do this remote play, I think it's a fine idea. I mean, why not? I don't know how the phones are. I haven't heard much in the way of, you know, people's impressions of those as competitive phones in the Android market, but why not, man? Why not extend that IP out to other devices that aren't your core gaming machines?
What do you think, Christian?
Yeah, it's a great, great idea. I'm always in favor of more tech being in more things. I wish that it was not limited to their phone, but I understand why it is. But it'd be awesome if it was just an app that worked on, you know, an iPhone, any Android or any Windows phone or whatever like that. And hopefully we'll get there. And hopefully it works well. I don't know. One thing I think is interesting about the Vita TV or whatever they're calling it in the U.S. Is that according to their facts, it says to do, you know, remote play, it needs a wired connection. Mm-hmm. And I know obviously the Vita doesn't have that, but some cell phones, the wireless chips cannot be as great as others. But if it works well and it's another way for people to expand their play, then that's awesome. Why not include it?
Pretty cool.
It's really weird that Apple TV thing, or Apple TV, PlayStation TV, they're going to call it here in the States. It's weird that hardwired connection thing is even a requirement, given the fact that PS4 to Vita can be Wi-Fi on all ends and you can ad hoc that thing and make it really fast. It's strange to me that they're going to have that limitation.
I think it was over the same Wi-Fi network. They were saying, as long as you're in the same Wi-Fi network as your console, you shouldn't have a problem. But they said that it might actually work remotely over the web, but they can't guarantee that you'll have a smooth service that way. You'll have a smooth experience that way. They could possibly work, you know, in your hotel room, you know, talking to your PS4 back at your home, theoretically.
Yeah, just crazy. I love that idea, but it's crazy.
Yeah. More proof if you needed it, even though we awarded it. Well, we didn't award it. It was robbed. We wanted to award Tetris the greatest game of all time back when our March Madness. Actually, Scott participated in our March Madness.
I did.
Back in episode 10. Tetris, indisputably the greatest game of all time. Gonna be a movie, y'all. Gonna be a movie. Tetris the movie. What? This is.
I have an opinion about this. So here's the thing. You can take something like, I don't know, Battleship, which is, you know, not a video game, but you can take Battleship and you can kind of make the connection. All right, big ships, maybe some aliens, but, you know, whatever, big ships, and we'll fight each other, and we can call that Battleship. Or you could even take Asteroids or Defender or any number of classic game, and you can figure out a way to shoehorn a story into that thing. I have no idea how Tetris is going to work in this way. Because it's
well, that's
big,
why
giant
I wanted
shapes.
To bring it up. I wanted to bring it up because let's pitch the Tetris movie. Give me a Tetris movie, Scott, that doesn't suck. Can you do it?
Okay. Yes. In a future where all the land has been taken up, kind of like Hong Kong style. Imagine if you've ever been to Hong Kong. I've been there once, but everything's built up. There's no building
stacked
out.
Stacked on each other.
Up.
Yes.
So
yes,
if you want a new tennis court, you better put it on top of a building because there's no other room to do it. Uh-huh. We are in a future where we have completely industrialized everything and there is no free land anymore. And so big, vast spaces in places like Kansas are now just skyscrapers everywhere. And there is a grand competition now every year where kind of Running Man style, some of the great workers of the world who are slaves to work, they're not there to get paid. They actually are slaves now to huge governments and corporations. They get their freedom if they can most quickly build the next building faster than the others in the competition. And they do it with giant cranes and huge shapes that sometimes fit together, sometimes don't. But if they can build that thing, basically they have to lose at Tetris to win because you can't eliminate the bottom row and have it keep going down, right? You want to actually get to the top and then they win their freedom. That's my movie. There's my pitch.
I love it. It's Blade Runner meets, Running Man meets, some sort of architectural construction film. I love it. Meets Inception. Yeah, there you go.
Perfect.
Spicer, pitch me the Tetris movie that doesn't suck.
The Tetris movie that doesn't suck is just the scene on loop from the Academy Award snubbed winning movie, The Amazing Spider-Man. When Spider-Man's got to get to that building, let's move the cranes to help him. And they're moving cranes and falling blocks. And they're going to save Spider-Man by moving these blocks in his way. And you're combining two of the best genres ever, comic books and Game Boy games.
Can we have that weird accent also, whatever that is that you did?
I think that was you doing Dana Carvey doing John Travolta.
Who I can also do me doing Dana Carvey doing George Bush, but I can't do a George Bush. I've said that I can do any accent ever as long as I'm yelling. Any accent as long as I'm yelling. I can nail it. Otherwise, I can't do it.
All right.
All right, guys.
What's your pitch?
Ready for this?
Yeah.
Tetris is... they sing it's going to be a big sci-fi epic, but here's what my take. It's the movie... okay, so it's a team of dudes that need to break into certain things. They're like hackers. They're going to break into certain things, and they develop a software program that allows them to hack into certain things by manipulating objects and fitting them into certain places. So Tetris is just the function of them. Tetris isn't out in the world in this movie. It's in their computers still. They're still basically playing a version of Tetris, but it allows them to have cool action sequences and do cool things. They're having to run from the cops and also still play Tetris at the same time. And there's a rival team that's also good at Tetris, and their rival team is called Dr. Mario.
There it is.
Well, I wondered when that – I mean – yeah, I should have guessed. Nice. Nice job.
So real quick for clarity for people that aren't in the chat, there's a fact now where it looks like Sony is saying remote play over wireless for Vita or PlayStation TV will work. However, their original announcement still says if you're a PS4 owner, use remote play to stream a remote play enabled PS4 game to your console to a PSTV over a wired internet connection. But then a newer fact that they have up says that you could set it up wirelessly. So FYI.
Mm. I got another idea for the Tetris movie, guys.
Go for it.
I've been working on this a lot since I got back from Italy. Yeah, it's good. So Aliens. Actually, there was sort of there was a funny comedic trailer that was the Tetris movie pitch online I enjoyed. And this was kind of inspired by that. So aliens are coming to Earth and they're in these giant Tetris piece shaped ships. And we as on Earth, in order to save ourselves, they're dropping down from the sky on us. In order to save ourselves, we need to sort of dig holes to fit them in so they don't crush us. So it has to fit smoothly. No? Okay.
Okay, how about Wizard 2? And it's just about a bunch of scrappy kids getting across the country to the great Tetris tournament in California. Uh-huh. Why not that?
That's cool. It takes place in 1989.
Yeah.
Yeah, when Tetris
Fred
was
Savage and actually, wait, was he in that? I don't remember now.
He was. Yeah, he was the wizard. Right.
And there'll be another glove, but it won't be the Nintendo glove. It will be the Russian gauntlet of Tetris or something.
Dexmo. It's Dexmo.
I think it's an old College Humor video, maybe, but there's the live action trailer for Minesweeper, and it is excellent.
Yeah, I've seen that too. We could go on and on, I think, talking about Tetris movie pitches, and I'm sure everyone listening only wants us to do that. But I will move on and talk about, we got a couple other stories here. One of which is, you guys talked about it last week when I wasn't here, Christian, the Xbox One launching in China. Evidently, it did gangbusters. 100,000 units on the first day, according to Chinese games website 17173, which is catchy title. You never know. The news out of China is always questionable. You never know. But evidently, they said it sold more than 100,000 units on its first day. And this is from the Shanghai Media Group, a conglomerate owning Best TV, which is Microsoft's partner in Japan.
That seems super low to me, though. I mean, it's like a spam proposition. The reason spammers still succeed is it's just a numbers game. So if you spam out enough emails with a crappy spam in it, if even a tiny, tiny percent of 1% click it, then they've made their money. If this feels like that in a country of, you know, how many billion are there now? I don't even know.
A lot of billion. There's a lot of peas. It didn't work in Japan. It didn't work in Japan. Japan, they only sold 23,000 units, which was the worst launch of any console in the history of man anywhere, which is pretty sad. But it's interesting. As you said, guys mentioned last week, Christian, this is the first foreign console to be launched in China since like 2000, which is pretty big deal. And I'm sure the Xbox Blun is selling really well on the streets of China, even better. The Xbox Blun, which is the, you know, the knockoff hacked version that is half the price, because China is famous for
hacked stuff. Yeah.
So wait, if China's good at knockoffs, how good would they be at protecting our world from a Tetris alien invading force? Can they knock them off?
Awesome. Also, Star Citizen, the crowd-funded Chris Roberts joint about flying around in a spaceship, went into the Guinness Book of World Records as the biggest crowd-funded anything. 55 million. More crowd funds than anything ever.
The bigger news here is the Guinness Book of World Records went into the Guinness Book of World Records for still being a thing that people talk about.
Yeah, I guess.
Who cares? Who cares about the Guinness? Records hasn't been relevant since 88 when I bought it up at the book fair at my elementary school.
All right, fair enough. You don't care about the world's fattest twins, I guess. You don't care about they adorably riding their little mopeds.
You don't care about website whose URL I don't remember, but it was just like basically saying the internet exists. We don't need Guinness anymore. And you could just submit your own. So they're just like it was like smacking my lips the most times in a minute. And like I had the world record for that for a little bit. It was pretty awesome. No big deal.
But that, you know, this is wrong. What's wrong with journalism today? You know, anybody can be a journalist. Anybody can be a this. Anybody can be a that because of the internet. Well, guess what, people? Sometimes you need the Guinness man to come with the book and be official and make sure there's rules and regulations. Otherwise, you have dogs and cats living together.
And sometimes you need a man back from Italy, freshly married, to protect us from Tetris aliens.
Oh, I like
Summer
this.
2016.
I like this pitch.
Jeff Cannata stars in a Frog Pants Studio production, Tetris, the movie, the podcast.
Oh, you just ruined it at the end there. I think we may have lost Scott. Did we lose Scott?
Well, he heard my pitch and he jumped off to start making the show a reality.
All right, well, let's get to the playlist. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist. Yeah, the playlist. That's the part of the show where we talk about what we're playing, and it's also the part of the show where we like to hear what you are playing. You can call in and let us know what is on your playlist by calling 512-518-5714. Again, 512-518-5714. I'm assuming we do not have Scott. So, Christian, tell me what's been on your playlist.
Shadows of Mordor.
Yeah, I think it's on all of ours. Yeah, go ahead.
On PlayStation 4-door. Mm-hmm. And Super Smash Brothers on 3DS Brothers.
Well, why don't we start with the Smash Brothers, because I know that Scott wanted to jump in on the Shadows of Mordor conversation, so let's wait until he gets back for that. But you tell me what's going on for... Are you digging the Smash Brothers 3DS?
So, where to start? There are a mountain.
How are the ice climbers? How are the multiple ice climbers that you're being able to play?
Well, yeah, it makes it hard to climb the mountain of pros and the mountain of cons without the ice climbers to climb them. It is a great game for the 3DS. Played it on the plane this past weekend when, you know, my daughter was occupied. I could jump in and just play a quick game and then put it to sleep and put it away, and it was great. It's great. There's tons to do in this game. I mean, between the various modes and unlockables and, it's content rich, hours of entertainment. It's a very, very good game, well built, well made. The problems with it are, I feel as if a lot of this content is poorly described and progress towards unlockables isn't necessarily given, and you don't quite know what you need to do to get certain things. Granted, I haven't been deep on the message boards since kind of the day it came out, but people have been reporting like doing different things to get Rob, and like how do you do it and what do you do it, and some people might argue that that's kind of cool and it requires you to be part of this online community or whatever, but I think in today's gaming age, I find it a little frustrating that you don't quite know, do I need to play classic Smash or go on a Smash run, or what game mode do I need to do to make progress to get these things? That said, playing all of these modes is fun and enjoyable, but I find it a little overwhelming at times to know what to do to get the things that I want. So that's one con. Another is the circle pad. It just doesn't cut it. Like it plays fine, and I'm having lots of fun with the game. But I don't want to project to other people. I miss moves, and I imagine most people will. You're just not as precise on this thing as you want to be for a game like Smash, where you know you go to smash and knock someone out, or you know, you jump. I ended up changing the default controls where I put jump on a bumper because I found that more reliable for me than with the small buttons and the circle pad. So I find that to be an issue. But it's fun. No one will be playing this 3DS version as the competitive version, right? There won't be right. The 3DS Smash tournament. And then the last little gripe that I have with it is when the screen zooms out and there are four characters on there, I mean, that was always chaotic. Even, you know, early Smash days. And I'm just playing on a traditional size 3DS. I mean, I lose my guy. Like, I don't know where my Captain Falcon is. I just do my up super so that I'm hopefully hitting somebody and staying in the center of the screen until it zooms back. But that said, man, it's a pretty, pretty game. I don't think screenshots necessarily do it justice. In motion, it's really nice. The 3D effect on the game itself, it's nice. I don't play it that way in general because I am not a huge fan of it. But if you enjoy 3D, it works really well. The game is fun. What I think this game does, and we joked about this, you know, when they released the split dates, man, this is a sweet appetizer for that Wii U version because it's just fun enough, but it makes you want that super accurate, you know, precise version. Yeah. And I think they're going to sell some Wii U's and some Wii U Smashes on this. And then I've had problems with the online recently. I've been able to get into games, but it's been laggy. I don't know if that's just me. I was at my parents' house in Texas this past weekend. They have a speedy internet, but that was a problem I was encountering. But you have not played this game. Is that correct, Jeff?
I played it at E3, but I haven't played it on my 3DS. No, not yet.
Yeah, and Aldrin in the chat is saying that if you tap any profile on the bottom screen, you get that character framed by a red target box. And that's true. It does help when you zoom out. But, I mean, I think we can all agree that taking your hands off of the controller to tap on something on the bottom screen to get that framed character is, one, you're going to get hit when you let go of your controller. And, two, I find that that kind of clutters the screen in a way that I don't like either. But it is, I mean, it's a well-made game. I know there were concerns when it was quote unquote outsourced, right? And Namco was stepping in to do the development of this game. But the characters feel great. The sound is great. The levels, I really enjoy the, you know, people were concerned on the 3DS that, oh, the smaller scale, the levels won't be as fun or whatever. I think it's a really, really fun game. That said, I feel like the Wii U version is for sure going to be the definitive version of this game.
Have you been able to play multiplayer with anybody, like, or, you know, 3DS to 3DS on the couch type thing, little ad hoc game?
So I have not played local, quote unquote, multiplayer. I was playing online and I had a run of five really, really great matches right at first, at, you know, midnight or whenever I got the game downloaded and installed. And then since then, my four player matches have all been laggy, unfortunately.
Hmm. Let's talk about Shadow of Mordor. I know I've been playing it just since I got back last night. I popped it in, and I know both of you guys have been playing it. Scott, you've been digging on it, right?
Yeah, I really like this game a lot. A lot of people, I mean, I agree with the sentiment that despite the fact that I think it has a really strong story and a really kind of awesome character, great acting, all the stuff you want in a good story-driven game, that's all there. But if you really kind of paint it by the numbers, it is definitely a lot of Assassin's Creed and a lot of the Batman Arkham games, in the battle system for Batman and the sort of world exploration and sort of, you know, open worldliness of it and traversal stuff that is in the Assassin's Creed games. If that's all this was, it would be weirdly disappointing. It's good in those ways. Like, it's the combat is solid, the traversal stuff is great, the exploration is great, the graphics are great, all that stuff is good. But they would be kind of, this would just feel like some kind of weird hybrid knockoff of those games. But that Nemesis system they layered on top of this changes the entire game. And I don't mean this game, I mean the game of open world combat games. It changed everything about it for me. And I don't know how deep you are in, but I'm maybe, I don't know, 20%, 25% into the game. I am obsessed with this power structure of the orcs and the Uruk-hai stuff and how to get the next guy and how to take out his lieutenant so he's going to be easier for me to get later, and watching them fight each other and seeing the sort of weird AI politics of it all. I find
super
it absolutely
cool, right?
Fascinating. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, this... faithful listeners of the show will remember that this was my pick pre-E3 for sleeper of E3. I am so pleased that it has lived up to those expectations, because I don't think many people had this on their radar, but it sounded so interesting, this system you're talking about reputation and how all of the orc lieutenants and chiefs have a memory of what they did with you, and they have this power level system, as do you, that goes up and down based on your interactions with them and their subordinates. It's such a great thing. I wish I could retroactively take this system and plug it into other games. You know, I would love this to be in Red Faction Guerrilla, for example, one of my favorite
games.
It just adds such an interesting tension to the world and an interdependence between things. And it would be great to have this be in Far Cry, for example, of how, you know, doing something in one corner of the world affects something in another corner of the world, and you are remembered for what you did and how these guys move up and down in power. It's just so, so clever and genuinely new, genuinely fresh. Really cool.
Which is a rare thing these days. I don't feel like we haven't seen something new under the sun in a while. And it's that was nice on its own right, but it is kind of ruining other games for me, or even potential games, in the sense that it's so new and so fresh and so cool. And if the rumors are to be believed, this was going to be a new Batman game. And then there was some shuffling around about who was going to make it. And it may have been the Origins team and it may not have been and blah, blah, blah. But they retained so much of the features that make Batman a good traversal / combat game in this other suit of clothes, which is Lord of the Rings, obviously.
Yeah.
But you can see this system with Batman villains. You can see this system working extremely well in an Assassin's Creed game, like a proper Assassin's Creed game. And I'm honestly now worried about my expectations of the new Assassin's Creed game, because it's not going to have this that we know of, any sort of thing like this.
Right.
It would be downright revolutionary for that series if it had something similar to that as well. Like, it feels like a big enough of an impact in the gaming world. And it's this strange thing that I have a terrible time explaining to people how it actually works.
That's what I was going to say, because we've all played it, but I can't. Yeah. Like, what's the log line?
It's so hard.
30 seconds or less.
Sure. And once you've played it, though, it's all becomes clear. Like you're all, oh, okay, now I know why right. this is the greatest thing ever. But it's so hard to explain. And in a way, I think that was their biggest challenge because leading up to these initial reviews and stuff, nobody knew what to expect. They just thought they were getting an open world throwaway Lord of the Rings games, like all the EA stuff, who cares? And what came out of it is right now top of my list for game of the year. It's just amazing.
I love what Tondagosa in the chat room said. He says, each encounter feels unique, made for me. And that's really cool. I agree. I just started it. I'm only a couple, 3 hours in, but already I see the tapestry being woven, and it's all about repercussion, and it's all about feeling like I am, as a gamer, am having an impact on this world, and this, and it's a two-way conversation. It's not just like I'm ticking off the next mission on my list. I am doing that, but it's also having ripple effects for the two missions down the line, and how this guy's going to remember what I did, and how, you know, there's politics, basically a very, very basic version of it. But I'd love to see people start ripping off this idea and iterating on it and making more and more complex versions of this, so that really you have a much more vibrant world and much more cause and effect for what I'm doing. It's not just, you know, mowing down the next guy. It really is a universe that listens to me in a weird sense. Sure.
And if you remember, I mean, it doesn't take much to remember how many times you've heard people say the great holy grail of video games is a world you leave an impact in, where you have a lasting impact in it. MMOs have tried to promise it and largely failed at doing that. You know, big games with open worlds have said, oh yeah, you're making a huge impact. Most of it's scripted and pretty linear, but this is different.
When we hear that, oftentimes what we get is, when you break a building, it stays broken, you know. Yeah. Or the Peter Molyneux version is an acorn falls over here, and then, you know, a couple years later, game time years later, there's a tree. It's like, okay, well, that's fine, but to have, it's much more interesting to do it this way, where it really is about the interconnection of the characters in the world, rather than just, you know, I kicked a log so it stays kicked, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the big difference here, is that you feel like you're making a tangible difference, and that impact is reacting to you in a myriad of ways. Some of which are just, I am so pissed at a couple of these chieftains,
right,
who are eluding me, or have too many guys working for them, or too many, you know, incidental orcs wandered into the fight and I couldn't get him. He's killed me way too many times, and he's way at the top and has a power level that is just unbelievable. I cannot wait till I figure out a way to take that guy down.
Right.
And every time he looks at me and says, "Oh, can't stay dead forever, can we?" and all this kind of thing. It's just the biggest. Those guys are perfectly illustrated as, you know, Mordor's, you know, they're all such freaking jerks. I think that's part of what the beauty of it is I am not feeling any kind of, what's the word? I'm not torn about whether I should off these orcs or not. They all right. need to go.
I would love this system in the next Crackdown. It would be amazing. You know, the first Crackdown was all about taking down the bosses, and you could sort of do it in any order you wanted, or to a point, any order you wanted. But they didn't have any, you know, you'd cleanse, or whatever term you want to use, an area of the map, and it would cease to be a certain way. Or even Infamous, the latest Infamous, Second Son, is like that. But if what you did in one area had ramifications, all these games would benefit from the system. And it's just so cool that they've figured out a way to make that work.
I don't want to freak everybody out, but you know what reminds me of this game more than anything? And this is totally weird, I get it. But Animal Crossing is the closest I've ever come to a game that felt like this. Because in Animal Crossing, you had that thing where you could like send somebody a letter, and like 8 months later, he would come back to town and say, "Hey, I just want you to know, when I lived here, my favorite thing was getting that letter from you." Like, "Oh, that's right, I sent you a letter." That's as close as a game has gotten to this weird, I have left a dent in this world that, you know, until this game. And I know that seems like completely disparate examples, and they are.
Oh, that's great.
But man, I could use more of that in most of the games I play.
It reminds me of Tetris.
Yep.
Christian, what's your take?
Kill the chieftain pieces or whatever.
Right.
The game, I am not, people are going to hate me more than they hate me. I'm not the biggest Tolkien fan or Middle Earth fan. So while this game was getting good buzz, and from you and others at E3, this game was kind of this is going to be a crazy fall. I'm going to let this game go by the wayside. Smash comes out in a couple of days after that. I'm going to get that. And then the release came out and everybody was singing its praises. People whose opinions I respect were singing its praises. So I took the plunge, and what a fantastic game. Granted, I believe we are all playing on current gen or, you know, PS4, Xbox One. None of us are playing the last gen version, so I can't attest to, can't speak to those. But yeah, everything Scott said is right on the nose. It's one, I think, gorgeous, and it's so fun to die, if that makes sense. Like, it's fun slash frustrating to see that happen and to see the impact of how even dying changes the world around you. Since I'm not the biggest Middle Earth fan, knowing that this game apparently used to be a Batman game, oh, I really wish it was a Batman game. I'd love to see.
But the story's great, right? Still, I mean, even if, as a non-Tolkien fan, you can, I would assume that you would still dig the storytelling, no?
The storytelling is, it's told very well. That type of fantasy isn't my favorite. So I'm not super drawn into the story. I mean, it's compelling in the way that, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's anything head and shoulders above what other games have done. It's you died and you're going to avenge, and but it's all well voice acted and animated and whatever. But no, I don't think the story is revolutionary in any form or fashion. But
well, I just want to say that I mean the storytelling rather than the story. I agree with the story.
Sure, yes.
The story's rather mundane.
And, yes.
Yeah, but the way it's told, I think, is actually really great.
Yeah, well, and then the Mordor cards that you get to go online to read about really fill it out.
I really hate it when I have to see the entire story in the game and I can't quit the game, log onto a computer, and read text that's printed on a virtual card.
Yeah.
That's really how I prefer hearing all my stories, whether they be...
You both love Hearthstone, and that's what that is.
There's no story in Hearthstone other than come into my bar and sit down.
Yeah. I guess, you know, movie theaters one day will have kiosks outside the theater. You can run out there anytime you want.
I can only hope. Yeah. Take a second. Leave the movie. Are you enjoying Gone Girl? Leave the movie.
Good movie.
Go walk outside. Look at this. There's a website.
Yeah. Look it up, read about it. Gone Girl cards, they call them. And Fincher cards, they're going to call them. That's it.
Yeah. The Gone War. Anyway.
Now, here's the thing, though. I think this system is so impactful that it will end up in so many games. And I think there's going to be a bunch of sort of weird internet and like, meh, I can't believe you stole this idea. But it's so funny because people leading up to this game were like, you're stealing Assassin's Creed and Batman. And now they've got this amazing, unique thing in it. And now moving forward, if Batman games and Assassin's Creed games and these other open world games don't adopt something similar.
Yeah, it'll feel less than.
I'm really sad about that.
Imagine if this was in GTA.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dude, like mob bosses you'd want to hit. Think of the games you could make. You could make a Sopranos game.
Yeah.
For example, that would actually work and not feel like a dumb tie-in. Because you'd have this crazy thing. And the big catchphrase in the last 6-7 years was always this emergent gaming. I have now finally seen something emerge that wasn't going to happen to anyone else in a game. And it happened when I came across one of my targets. And it just so happened that two of the other guys happened to be in the same vicinity. And one of them ended up helping me kill the guy that was so hard to kill. Meanwhile, the other guy ran off somewhere and escaped, got two more PowerPoints. Got ranked up someplace and I had to go kill him later. It was a thing that neither of you are ever going to see because you're going to see your own version of that is totally weird and different and happenstancy and truly emergent. Like I did not expect to get that from this game.
Well, what I want this to permeate into is not just action games, but I want it to be in Elder Scrolls. You know, it to be in those kinds of games where, and there's a little of that already happening.
Wait. If the one thing I want to see this game, this scenario in is not an action game. You know, the scenario where I go around killing orcs and taking down their power structure. I want to see that.
More role-playing than
non-action game.
All right. I would want it in, honestly, give me a genre. It can be cartoony kid, Nintendo, Kirby's Great Threaded Monkey, whatever. I don't care. Give me
those
anything.
Threaded monkeys are going to remember this day.
Right? Yeah. But I mean, there are plenty of examples where it would totally, a new Mario game would benefit from a boss nemesis type system that created more intriguing enemies that you would come across during the thing and a quick cut scene where you see how pissed that Goomba is at you and you got to I mean, it just kind of applies to everything. It still can't explain it, but I know it works everywhere. It's the weirdest thing.
Do you think that it's dependent on the fact that you know that it's a system that's upfront and tells you? If it just was happening sort of in the background and when you encountered the guy, he said something that triggered it?
It's a good mix, right? Because they don't tell you a ton. They give you a grid with a bunch of dudes and you kind of have to intuit what's happening. And you're like, oh, okay, intel means I can learn about one of these guys. Oh, I can get additional intel from other just random orcs. Okay, that's interesting. And so they're protecting bigger guys. Like they don't really, they do not hold your hand through the understanding of the system. So I feel like it's a perfect balance. It's like, all right, we're going to give you this grid thing where they're all standing kind of chess style. And you're going to intuit a lot from that. And then when you get out into the world, that's going to start to make more and more sense as you go. And I think it was the right decision. I don't want too much handholding there. And but it's also, if they had none of that in the kind of the grid look, we'd have been screwed. I wouldn't know what the hell I was going after or what I was trying to do.
Well, so, I wonder if they didn't even quite know how to describe it. You know, I'm not trying to knock the intelligence of the people that made this game, but it's kind of like, You run the risk of really over-explaining something and my eyes glazing over and being like, I don't care. I'm just going to do the missions or just leaving it totally open-ended. And you're like, what? Why is this guy so hard? And I feel like maybe they just kind of snuck into that happy middle of like, well, here's this thing. And like totally no one knows what it is, but everybody loves it.
Totally agree.
McFisticuffs in the chat makes a great comparison to the Drivatar system, which I think is an apt comparison that it remembers what you do.
Right. I don't know that it's as, you know, it doesn't have the visceral quality that this does, but it's the same idea. It's to give you this weird
Drivatars
continuity.
Drivatars kind of suck. In reality, sounds like, I haven't played Horizon 2, but in Forza 5, Drivatars kind of suck.
Christian, the side of your mouth is saying something. I don't know if the rest of the side of your mouth is saying.
Let me try this other side. Man, Microsoft sure is a crappy company. What am I saying?
Wow. That side of your mouth is brutal.
Drivatars are wonderful tech. Hopefully in the future, I feel like they have yet to be realized in a way that is good.
We're not gonna dive into that right this second. Maybe when Horizon is out, we can talk about that more in depth. But we have Scott
it's
on
out,
the show.
Right? Isn't it out? Oh, I just don't own it. I don't
know. Horizon 2's out, yeah.
It's out.
I don't own it either. So we can talk about it when one of us owns it. What I do want to talk about is the fact that I got back from being away for 17 days and friggin' Heroes of the Storm is offline for a week.
Yep. Got your final wipe, though.
Wiped all my progress.
Yeah. Final wipe, though. That's it.
Yeah. Okay.
They say.
I don't think you and I have had a chance to talk about this yet. I love it with my whole heart. You playing a lot of it or not so much?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm not playing a ton because I did this with Hearthstone. I got my feet real wet for a long time and then went, okay, I really want to spend, because I didn't know when the last wipe was going to be. Now, moving forward, I think I'll play like crazy if that wipe is over. If we're not wiping anymore, I'm good.
No more wipes after this for alpha players. I don't know what that means exactly. I mean,
it means bidets only.
By the way, coming from Italy, I have a new respect for the bidet.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
More civilized.
I wish we had the culture to accept bidets like they do, because I would love a bidet, personally.
Well, that'll be the bidet that I die.
Yeah, that's right. It's a good bidet to die. That's hard to say. I would say that that game is great, and the reason I think it's great is because Heroes of the Storm takes me, a non-very good MOBA player, in a very kind of a toxic environment for MOBAs out there right now, and gave me something that feels less toxic and less weirdly micromanagey, and gives me just something really fun to play. They're making the MOBA I want to play. It's great.
But is that just, and Jeff, I think we talked about this while you were gone.
No, I heard you. Your side of your mouth was saying it to me. I heard it last week. No, I heard it, Christian. The side of your mouth was indicating that I only like it because in the alpha, it's a smaller player base and I can be awesome and not be terrible because there's a lot of really good players that aren't in the alpha. I heard it.
I'm saying that's how I would be, and some of that is true. Some of that is true. I was wondering if that's how you are.
You think that's true, Scott?
I think some of that is true, but here's what I think Blizzard is doing in hopes that there is a big untapped part of that market that does not like that toxic atmosphere, and that they are just waiting for a game that appeals to them. There is certainly a lot of noise right now from both the Dota 2 and the LoL core player base saying they're not going to go anywhere near Heroes of the Storm. They see it as an abomination and not a true MOBA. Some would say, well, that's bad if Blizzard wants to compete in that space. I think they're banking on, and I would also argue that there is a huge player base that would like to play a game like this and is looking for a place that maybe has, you know, more of their style in mind. And part of this is I'm completely biased toward Blizzard products and I love them and I'm a complete fanboy and I'll admit that up front anytime. But also, I really do think they genuinely want to make a game that is less prone to those kinds of problems. That doesn't mean that WoW doesn't have its jerks or Hearthstone or anything else, because they surely do. But I do think there is some of that where we're in a smaller alpha player base and there's just going to be a little bit less of that. There'll be a-holes. Then in them there are hills, there are a-holes at some point. But maybe sure. Not as many as League of Legends, and that's fine with me.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I like the fact that they're positioning it in a slightly different way. They don't talk about it as a MOBA. They talk about it as a brawler. And I think that there is a slight distinction there. And I think that the way the game is designed is meant to engender team fights more quickly and more often than either League of Legends or Dota do. And I happen to really dig that.
It's going to be huge. Yeah. I don't think people need to worry that it doesn't do lull numbers at launch or something.
Oh, it's going to be huge, yeah.
But it's going to be big and it's going to be fun. And I like their approach a lot more. And I really trust that team and I like who's in charge. And the only downside of who's in charge is he's not over there working on the final StarCraft expansion, which from a story perspective, I'd really like to get to at some point in my lifetime. But beyond that, they're getting into a market that was spawned in their own backyard and they didn't take advantage of it. So this is kind of them finally taking the reins and saying, look, we want a piece of this action arena, AKA MOBA pie. It started here. It should end here. So let's make one. And I think that's great.
Yeah, I just want to keep talking about it because I can't play it right now, which really drives me crazy. A very addictive game. Okay,
playing right now, Jeff, what would you be doing?
What would I be doing?
Yeah. Where are you? What are you doing? Who are you attacking?
I'm taking the bottom lane. I'm going bot, and we're pushing hard. When the mines come up, we're definitely. Wait, that sounded wrong. I'm sticking in the bidet. Whatever. All right. I am very jet lagged. Did I mention that?
Yeah.
All right. There's a little bit of time left. A little bit of tabletop time.
Right now.
Oh my God! I totally forgot to take calls in the last segment. I can't believe it. There's been people online. We're gonna take a call.
Is drunk Jeff any different than jet lag Jeff? I'm just curious.
Very similar.
Okay.
Also, I'm drunk. Oh, great. I'm still drunk on all the wine that I drank. I had more wine in a 2-week period than I've had my entire life put together, and it was
really?
Glorious.
More wine than when we talked about Destiny.
Heyo! I don't even know what that means. You think I was drunk?
I think you were whining.
Oh, I get it.
I got it.
I get it because I had legitimate criticisms. That's okay. All right, I'm taking a call. I forgot there was people on the line and they probably all hung up already, but here's one from 607. You are on the line. What is your name? Where are you calling from? And what was on your playlist or what would you like to talk about? Anything?
Hey, this is Jeff from Rochester, New York. And like all you guys, I'm playing Shadows of Mordor as well. Just kind of echoing what you guys were saying earlier is that, you know, it copies, you know, the Batman fighting system and, you know, the Assassin's Creed open world system really well, but the Nemesis system really, really propels that into doing something special. A pat on the back to Monolith as well for developing a really solid PC port of this. You know, we haven't gotten a solid PC port in quite a while. Great job to them, especially, you know, releasing an HD texture pack. Really shows their dedication to the PC market, which is really nice. But just a note as well is that the 360 and PS3 versions of the game are not going to have the Nemesis system in them. So if you're kind of waiting to purchase it for those systems, you might want to hold off and see what kind of game that actually is going to be on those last gen systems.
Yeah, wow, those things are in there like 2 months out. Or something. I don't know if they're delayed or if that was intentional to do them that much later, but yeah, no Nemesis system in there, which, you can take away from that. Only next gen consoles and PCs could handle what needed to happen in the background, with more memory, more hardware, whatever, or you could just take it to mean this is quick and easy and it's an okay game on its own. And last gen will just have to live with it. I don't know where they landed here, but yeah, the current gen, AKA new gen, is the way to go.
And I totally agree about the PC version. Another great point from Jeff from Rochester. Thanks for calling in. A frequent caller. We dig that. I watched this morning a side-by-side comparison with the PS4 and the PC high-def pack. And boy, it wasn't much difference. I was very impressed with the PS4 version. So
yeah, I noticed that one as well. Also, I thought that, I would concur that Monolith, who has their feet so deeply rooted in PC development for years and years and years, was that No One Lives Forever? Was that the game?
Oh, I love No One Lives Forever. The series, yeah. They're a great Monolith.
That was so
mm-hmm.
good. I always think it's so a James Bond movie, but that was the joke.
I screwed up
and think it's an actual Bond movie, but those guys are so great. And the fact that they said, look, we're going to do a little extra stuff on the PC, that went a long way for me.
Man, I would love to see that series come back. Let's take another quick call. I think we got our buddy Matthew on the line from 850. Is this he?
Yes, it is. I have been playing Smash Brothers for the 3DS, and I want to give one comment about the online. The 1v1 works surprisingly well. It's free-for-alls that don't, which I never expected a four-way match to work well at a fighting game online anyway. So I was happy that they managed to do an amazing job with the 1v1 for multiplayer online.
Very cool. Hey, Christian, did you try the 1v1?
Yeah, and I agree. It works, but that, 1v1 isn't Smash to me. My personal thoughts on Smash is that it's four players, it's chaotic, it's crazy. And yeah, 1v1 working to me almost makes me angry that 4v4 doesn't work. Obviously, I know it's a different, you know, it requires more bandwidth or whatever, but it's frustrating. I want 4v4. I want it 1v3, whatever it is. I want four player online Smash to work.
Who's having the wine now? Okay, so we heard the Tabletop Time intro music, and we had a slight detour, but we're there now. Scott, you have been playing. You've been playing some board games.
I have been a little bit. I've been playing the DC Deck Builder from Cryptozoic.
Yeah,
It's literally called the DC Deck Building Game.
It is indeed. Yeah.
I really like it a lot, and I'm not really. Again, I suck at TCGs, CCGs. GCs of all kinds, or game card games of all kinds. I'm just not known for my prowess, but for whatever reason, this one's really sort of tickled my fancy. It's fun to play with the kids, and we have the expansion pack for it now, so we're including that in there. It's a great game, and I also like a good card game that is not a collectible, in that I got to go out and buy new decks all the time and hope I'm getting cool rare cards and stuff. For a real world game like Magic or something, I know it has its fans, but that's just never been my thing.
These are called living card games, which means that they have packs that will come out, but they will be closed. It's a closed system. So if you buy that pack, you get all the cards in the next, you know, expansion or whatever. Have you played Marvel Legendary at all?
No, I've heard good things. They at our Nerdtacular event this year, they had a bunch of that broken out on some tables, and people really, really seem to like it.
The one gripe, I haven't played DC Deck Builder yet, but the one gripe I've heard about it is that it kind of goes fast and loose with the theme, the DC theme, in the sense that you're getting characters that get powers that they shouldn't have, you know, laser beams in Aquaman's eyes and, you know, kind of weird stuff just because the card you get can be applied to any character.
This is true. Yeah. There is a bit of that going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a purist on the lore, like on the comic lore, it definitely takes some liberties, but, I don't know. There's a real speed to it that I like. I feel like there's not a lot of sitting around waiting for crap to happen. I feel like it's very action oriented, and we have a really good time with it. I like it.
Cool. You're also playing Star Realms, which is a game that I got into a lot too. That's really fun.
So that was a Kickstarter, and it's both tabletop and on iOS. I assume it's on Android as well.
I think so.
I played on the iPad, and that's really fun. And it's kind of in the same vein. It's a deck builder, not a collector. And it's just totally my brand of like science fiction mixed with some cool, like civilization building 4X kind of elements and some great combat stuff. And I'm really surprised how everyone always talks about failed Kickstarters. These guys are one of those I just like to point out and go, look at how it can be done, guys. Like these guys nailed it. It's really, really good.
Totally agree. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And especially that the final product, even the, you know, the physical card version, not the digital version, is cheap. It's like $10. So, really cool.
All in.
While I was on my honeymoon, busted out some two-player games because that's the kind of honeymoons that I have. And I think I've talked about this game before, but the wife... crazy to use that name.
The wife, dude. Weird.
The wife. I can say that now as I stare down at the ring on my finger. The wife dug Little Lost Cities, which is always a game that when I often get that question on Twitter, people saying, you know, what's a great game for my wife? Lost Cities is a great game for people that, don't play a lot of games. It's easy to teach. It plays really quick. It's a two-player only game by Renner Kanizia, who's a real famous game designer. And it's got a lot of number crunching, but usually number crunching means people can wrap their heads around it pretty quick. You're basically, the idea is you're going out on these expeditions, but that's just sort of a flimsy theme that doesn't really have much to do with anything. Basically what you're doing is you're trying to create strings of numbers and with a shared deck between the two of you. So you don't know if your string is going to get messed up by the person across from you. And you have this ticking clock because the deck is running out. And once the deck runs out, game over. And you have to maintain a certain number score in each of several columns or else you'll get negative points. And so it's a game of trying to, you know, how low down that number scale you're going to start your string, hoping that you can still get to the higher numbers and hoping that you'll have the higher numbers before time runs out. Real fun, easy to teach, as I said, in a great two-player game that works well, travels well. I picked it up at a convention for $5. I think a brand new version is only about 20. So Lost Cities, real good, easy, and fun two-player game that I would recommend for people's couplehood. Good,
just
good
like
stuff.
Thinking that you planned your honeymoon and marriage in Italy just to get your wife to play Lost. Man, the Colosseum sure is beautiful. It's like there's a whole entire Lost City built on. Well, funny.
Yep.
You should say that. Here's some brie and a baguette.
There's also a fantastic board game called Colosseum that that is from Days of Wonder that is... really highly recommended. I dig that game. It's very much more complex, but
while you thought Jeff was actually taking cooking classes, if you follow him on Instagram, that was actually a board game called Cooking Class and very involved.
Well, there are a lot of really cool cooking board games. There's one I really want to play. It's been coming out for years now. It's called Walkstar, and I'm hoping that it just is about to come out, and I'm hoping to try that one out very soon. Oh, but don't get me started. This was a fantastic episode, guys. Thank you so much, Scott, for being here. We always love having you.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, dude, I'm such a fan of you. And tell the people where they can find your stuff.
Sure. Are you coming? By the way, you going to BlizzCon in a month?
Maybe. You're not going to believe this. Speaking of wedding things, so we went to Italy and did this sort of elopement thing, but we're having a like a little family ceremony, official thing in town. And wife was like, back before she was wife, said, how's November 7th? And I was like, oh yeah, cool. No problems.
Well, that answers my question then.
Might be the
sad.
First. It
who's
might be the
bright,
first.
Whose bright BlizzCon. Peach shirt will I not be able to sit behind this year? That's
right?
Going to suck.
I know. First BlizzCon in, I can't even tell you how many years that I may miss. And it really is one of the ones that I'm most excited about because I'm so into Heroes of the Storm.
All this fan first. Stuff. And, you know, I just had an interview with Chris Metzen, maybe a month ago or a few weeks ago. And he said, this is the one not to miss. I don't know what that means. I don't know what he's talking about, but it could be something big, whatever fills the Titan hole. I don't know. Anyway, we'll see.
Mary,
if you want to follow me or find out what's going on in the world of my stuff, the best place to go is frogpants.com. All my shows are there. But for gamers and people interested in sort of enthusiast podcasts, I might point you to The Instance, which we mentioned earlier, which is all about World of Warcraft. I also do a show called The Diablo Show, which is super easy to explain what it's about. I love Diablo. Still playing the hell out of that. And you can catch that show as well. And there's also a brand new show called The Boop Show, B-O-O-P, which is news twice a week. It's me, and it's talking about video games, and it's awesome. You might enjoy that. And follow me on Twitter, at Scott Johnson.
Easy. I want you to say... We do a show called The Diablo Show. It's about Hearthstone. I do another show called The Hearthstone Show. That's about World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
And Christian, how about you, buddy? What are you doing this week?
If you are in or around or near LA, a Wednesday night show that's relaunching that I host with very funny comedian Jess Lane, who if you go to Channel 101 stuff or watch Channel 101 stuff, she's originally from New York, improviser, comedian, wonderful person. It's relaunching this Wednesday at 10 p.m. at a venue called The Clubhouse, which is kind of in the Vermont area of LA. Tons of free parking. It's at 10 p.m. It'll be super fun. And then Thursday at UCB, this month's improv versus stand-up is going to be incredible. Doing stand-up is Grant Cotter, who just finished touring all summer on the Funny or Die Oddball tour. So if you went to that, you saw him in your city. And then Jonathan Kite, who is Oleg from Two Broke Girls. And then the improv group is an expletive for crappy jobs. It's DC Pearson, Dominic Durkis, Donald Glover. List goes on and on and on. Whether or not there's about 10 of them that make up the group, and whether or not they will all be there, you never know, but some of them will, and they are fantastic friends and fantastic improvisers. That's Thursday at UCB. And I'm on Twitter at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. And I'm playing Smash on my 3DS. Let's friend code, I guess. Man, that's archaic system, but I'm having fun with it. So if you want to play, you can hit me up. We'll lag through some games together.
Cool. And I am on the Twitters at Jeff Canada with two N's and one T. Also, I'm doing a show called We Have Concerns with Anthony Carboni. That's a lot of fun. People seem to dig it. And actually, if you become a patron at patreon.com/We Have Concerns, you will get a piece of Scott Johnson original artwork that is friggin' awesome.
Yeah, I forgot.
And
yeah,
thanks to you.
I keep meaning to bring this up on here, but that was so much fun to make. I hope, dude, I hope a bunch of people get that.
So generous and awesome of you to do that, and it's really, really cool. It's us as a two-headed monster, which is really, really cool. The Slash Filmcast, we're about to do our Gone Girl review, should be coming out in the next couple of days, so Slash Filmcast is at slashfilm.com. That's going to do it for this episode, but we do have some parting gifts for you. Scott, do you have a parting gift to give the people, some recommendation of anything in any category that you might want to pass along?
Yeah, so I've been doing this thing every night where I read. I'm catching up on Saga, the comic. I love
so
it.
So good.
It's freaking amazing. I read that until my eyes kind of hurt. I'm reading that on my iPad, so I get a little eye strain. And then I binge watch The Sopranos, which I didn't get to see the first time around. It's like all new to me, so I'm like deep into season two. So that's my thing right now. A little bit of Saga, a little bit of Tony Soprano. Go to bed.
That sounds great. That sounds like a good recipe for
terrible dreams, though. I got to tell you,
yeah,
like a weird mix of Saga and The Sopranos. It is bad.
Demons and angels and mafiosos. Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah,
Christian, you got a parting gift?
Yeah. Well, super quick. Congrats to friend of our show. It was posted on his LinkedIn.
Five timer.
What?
He's a five timer. He's the only five timer of in DLC history. Although Scott is on his tail.
Yeah, well, I think Garnet's right time might be done, but he's at Amazon Fire doing awesome stuff for them. I'm sure today's his first day. So yeah. I saw that posted. Congrats to him. And mine, Scott, is reading as well. For whatever reason, I've been into the dark satire world again, and I've been revisiting an author whom I adore, Bret Easton Ellis, who I would say avoid movies he's written. Movie versions of his books are largely better than actual screenplays he writes for whatever reason. And it's dark and they're not for everybody. And it's maybe a satirical approach to oftentimes suburbs or the wealth or living, not a Desperate Housewives type of satire or slant, but a dark, rich, spoiled, drugged out view that oftentimes is, I think, hauntingly close to what some people experience. I would say start with Less Than Zero if you like that. In 2010, he came out with a sequel to that, Imperial Bedrooms, and then the novel version of American Psycho is very graphic and very dark. And if you don't like that stuff, stay away from it. But it's a fantastic novel. And if you like that kind of thing, I would check out Bret Easton Ellis' stuff.
Very cool. got to recommend the only thing that I've been doing for the last 2.5 weeks, and that is being unplugged and traveling. If you have an opportunity to unplug for a while, I think I'm so rejuvenated. And although you can't really tell from this episode, because I sound like a goofball, half asleep, it's great. I recommend it highly to people. It's really all I can talk about right now, because it's all I've been doing is, enjoying, the world and the different peoples in it. I met some really awesome people along the journey. Got married, had a great time, And I'm so grateful to this community of people that listen to this show. Thank you so much, all of each and every one of you, for listening. Very excited for the next few months. We're getting pushing toward the holiday release list. We've got some really cool games coming up. I'm excited for Dragon Age and Far Cry 4 and lots of other cool stuff. So keep your dial set right here. If you can listen live, we are at 11 a.m. Pacific time every Monday at 5by5.tv/live. We hope to hang out with you and really appreciate it. Until next time, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.